Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Yeah, we are Gurriers from Ireland, and we're very happy to be here.
No, you're not. Yeah, okay, let's start with no lying. I'm kidding.
No, that's one of the things.
I'm actually pleased that you're awake and we're all alive. You got a debut record. You've got the president of Ireland, and you've been at it for years. We're done.
Yeah, that's the whole story.
That is the whole story. We've got nothing more to do.
I've actually wanted someone to ask me what's my favorite color. Yeah,
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
I've heard loads of bands be like, "Oh, sick of bands ask me what's my favorite." People ask me what's
my
favorite.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, it's a good question.
You ready? Yeah. What's your favorite color?
I'm colorblind.
That's not even a lie.
There's your answer.
Oh, jeez. This is the guy who does the comedy when you guys are angry.
No, I think we're all pretty funny people.
I guess.
He's probably the funniest person who ever met in my life.
No, that's not true. Is that our first line in the HBO?
We'll not admit.
Maybe unintentionally.
We'll not admit to it. What's your favorite color?
I think my favorite color is green. And it has been since I was being very young, yeah.
And boy, we could just typecast that because of the way you're coming. Is it shamrock green or is it? Because we could just really get into trouble here.
The dark green here in this microphone is quite, you know.
Yeah, I've been on a green bus lately too.
Like green bus.
I'm like the Irish pub green, like.
Oh yeah, right. All right. So like, so many of us, and particularly bands, COVID. What a great opportunity to form something, have it stop in its tracks, and then have you try to figure it out. When you're not supposed to be near anybody.
Yeah.
So take me back a little bit. Formal training. Who's got formal training? Anybody actually sit and take lessons before you got on stage and shredded at people?
We all took classes, didn't we?
Or I had lessons for like 6 months when I was like 12 or maybe 13 or something like that. It's just like, here's a few chords, here's how you play Californication, and that was kind of it.
It's all you need.
That's pretty much it. Like, yeah.
I went to music college, so
you did?
I have a degree, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's somehow working.
What's wrong with you?
I like jazz.
Yeah. You formed this thing, you've been at it a while. How long is a while?
Five coming on 6 years.
Yeah. So, 6 years, we do the math. You started this thing and boom, lockdown.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, it was about a solid 2 years of just being stuck inside, trying to do this stuff remotely as well. Like,
Which just really is just the worst, right?
It was...
I had like, obviously yeah. It was...
Yes, you had, but you had cigarettes, so you were okay.
I had cigarettes and I had copious amounts of green as well that sort of be out, but it was good and bad. Like obviously like we couldn't work as a band in terms of like being in person, but like... I had like 2 years just to work on music at home, which kind of worked out for me then as well. So we just ended up writing loads at home. I know you were writing loads at home as well. So
we were like spread out across the country as well. So like I lived in the north part of Ireland on the border, and like Ben was living quite far down south. And then Dan and Pierce and Emmett at the time, our bass player, Jesse actually originally, were all in Dublin. Yeah. And then like lockdown would kind of come back, or the restrictions would peel back, and you could get in a room together for like a couple of weeks, and then you have to lockdown again, but we're always writing, yeah. Kind of making the best use of the time we could.
We did something though. We made sure that we used Zoom calls and stuff to just talk to each other and about the band and keep the band in the forefront of your mind all the time, because it could have been a thing where it's like, it's just a hobby kind of thing that like goes down the line and you forget about it. But no, we kept to it. We kept talking about it, and we just, you know, plugged away in that room for 2 years. And well, not 2 years, it's a bit of a lull at times, you know, but yeah.
When was the point where you turned to each other? Well, number one, did everybody have day jobs? Was everybody laboring at something? So what were you doing?
I was working in a cafe, and then obviously that kind of stopped. And then like when it kind of opened up again, like we were open, but like if I had like 4 customers in a day, I was doing well. So I was just on the laptop, just working on tunes the whole time. So shout out to Cafe Nero for helping me out write some tunes. Right.
I was the same. I worked in the same place.
I was in a very miserable gas station. I'm not talking anymore about that.
Oh my gosh.
I worked in a hotel and cleaning rooms, which was thrilling.
Debilitating is all get out. So where was the moment that you were on Zoom and you looked at each other and you said, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. We're going to make a living at this. Did you ever turn to each other and said, You know what? We might actually be able to make a living at this.
Like, not to be too over the top, but that was kind of always the... It was kind of go for broke. I'm not saying like, oh, we're going to be AC/DC or anything. But even the very first thing we wrote was Approachable, the very first time we ever jammed. And then,
that's impressive.
It was kind of just a fluke. It's just a B5 power chord, baby. Just keep hitting that thing. Shout out to the Beastie Boys, Sabotage. Shout out Mike
I'm
D,
not,
Ad Rock,
I'm not sure that,
MCA.
You know what? I'm going to give you a little more credit than that, though. It's nice to say you got lucky, but... You can get lucky once. You can get lucky. I mean, come on, you guys are from the home of the Shamrock. You know how many times you know how many times you can get lucky. No infrastructure to support the music scene. This is something you've talked about. But compared to the US, like Canada supports, Australia supports, Europe does have, but you're not talking about that. When you're talking about infrastructure, that's not necessarily about money, right? No. Yeah, that's a different game. So tell me about that.
For me, anyway, it's the whole thing. There's a great music scene in Dublin, and I think a lot of people, I don't know if this feels like for you guys, but like I feel like a lot of people will realize it was a great music scene years down the line, and it'll be something that you look back on, and it's one of those things where everybody feels like they're on the outside looking in, and I think it's because there isn't a venue or enough venues in Dublin for one place in general.
Where was the moment that there was that transition from we got lucky, we made a song, how long, because I want to, everybody loves to compress time, but you don't just suddenly be able to walk in to a studio and a producer like that. Or do you? Give me a little bit, how does that, because people just either assume, oh, well, they're rich, or there's, you know, there's all these things.
I wish we were rich.
Yeah. No, Christ, no, no, like. But the point is, you did go with a dude. You went to the studio. But that's kind of pretty cool for a debut record. That's not messing around.
We have a really good like team behind us. Like, we went on tour with Nola Gay pretty early on, and that's where we met our management. And like, shout out to Zoot, Sean, Rob, Jackie, Russ, all the team there. Like, they absolutely have our back. And it's
so
really
they found
helped us.
You. So you played the gig, yeah, the I opening think... gig, and they kind of went up to you and said, hey,
I think
we want to make some money from you.
I think they
said, no, we're not going to make any money, but at least we'll manage.
I think they'd heard Top of the Bill, or someone had heard, someone had heard Top of the Bill, and had showed it to someone who had showed it to someone who I guess showed it to someone else, and then they were like, "This is cool," and they came down the show and checked us out. Like,
shout out Simon Bailey.
Shout out to Simon Bailey. Yeah. And then they just came down the show, and they obviously thought we weren't shit, so they were like, "I guess we'll take a punt on them and see what the crack is," and they just helped us and backed us for the whole thing as well, and made it kind of possible for us to do this. Like, otherwise we'd probably still be back in Ireland trying to do anything we could to get out of Ireland and make some music around the world. Like,
we wrecked their heads and we owe them a lot. That's how I think.
How far did you take it in terms of what you brought in to the studio? How far were your demos? How far had you taken the stuff before you went in there to record?
That's a good question.
Sounds rubber.
Done, to be fair. Like, there was things where Alex would suggest, yo, I think if you drop that riff here and maybe we fill this space with something else, or even leave it a bit of silence, and then maybe that riff would come in somewhere else. There was lots of things where he might make arrangement suggestions or like tone suggestions. Had a lot of great ideas,
but he didn't really mess with the songs.
No
yeah,
no, this is important because again, the way it's written up, it's like, well, they went in and he gave him this, and you know, I really want people to understand, you know, what the roles are.
I think the songs, like, we worked really hard on all those songs, and like, for the most part, they're pretty much the exact kind of way we wrote them in the room. It's more just, I think, like, a real good producer or a great producer is really good at seeing perspective and being able to look outside the songs themselves and like how to elevate them. And I think that's what Alex like excelled at with us. It was like, cool, these are all good songs, how do I make them better? So it's less about,
he's also got a great attitude in terms of being able to like say when something and not working.
This time last year with Defense Contracts sponsors and all that, and 80 bands. I think it doesn't have to be an exact number.
It was about that, I'd say, yeah.
But that's a lot of people to be brave and make a stand, because that was your first time you were coming to perform.
Yeah.
Knowing that you pull it out and you have to wait another full year on the hope that they're not going to be stupid again and bring in a sponsor that the audience for this festival. You talk about the state of the times. You talk about the far right in Ireland. So the question is, how do you balance, we're a band, we want people to hear us, we want the music to get out there. How do you balance that out being this band?
With great difficulty. I think a lot of it comes down to, like, I suppose discussing it even internally in the band and, you know, trying to figure out what the best approach is, where you're kind of considering stuff like, you know, political situations like last year's protests and stuff like that, alongside what's the band's interest and what's like directly around you as a person.
Right.
It's almost like you kind of have to, whatever you're writing, saying, like, think about it in two kind of different lenses in a way.
Hooks. Where did you figure out that you actually understand the concept of song structure and hooks and all of that, and do you think you actually have?
I think hooks are the most important part of the song. Like,
I know, but think about what, and I'm being direct here, think about what you play. You come out, you're growling, you're doing all this thing, and the audience is just expecting you're gonna play one chord and go, and that's gonna be all there is.
Yeah.
But that ain't what it is.
I think
I think that's why you're here, because I dig hooks.
I think for us anyway, for me anyway, when it comes to the writing stuff, like, I kind of take it as in terms of like an electronic production kind of choice, where it's like, if you think about techno and stuff, there's always like a drop or whatever, and it's got the moment that happens and stuff. And I think for our music, it's like a similar kind of thing. Even like Des Goblin or whatever and stuff as well, that's probably our most like dancey kind of tune, but it has like a moment. And I think moments that are people are always looking for in tunes, like, you're always be like, oh, that section of that song where you need to play it back again as well. So I think that's something that we definitely try and like hone in on and stuff as well. It's like, you can have punk music and stuff as well, but like, why limit yourself to just like the one chord? It's like, take influence from everything and try to make it as like hooky as possible. Like,
I think it kind of comes naturally as well, not like in a like a pretentious way, but like, it was always like, it's not a thing that we kind of overthink as much either. Like, for me anyway, like, hooks and even choruses have to be, you know, as catchy and as much as possible. And like, I beat myself up in my head about getting it, you know, like, it has to be good, it has to be different, it has to be, I haven't heard of this before. And if I, and then sometimes like, oh, I definitely have heard this before, kind of lean into it as well at times.
I think as well, we all have a super broad range of influences. Like, when we're in the van, I'm not gonna get into that, but when we're in the van, we're not listening to rock music or the Sex Pistols, you know. Or also, we have a philosophy. Music is either good or it's there is no mediocre between, music. Like,
Fist bump for everybody. Guess what? Whole,
you know, Northern Ireland and south of Ireland, that's not been a problem for a very long time.
I think certainly amongst our generation,
yeah,
it's like that divide has definitely been bridged. And while it was there in, what, during the Troubles in the kind of 70s and 80s, it's like, even at that, because there's no like hard land border, the mix of people has always
been
fluid.
There's no wall.
There isn't.
This isn't Germany.
And like, you know, it's funny, it came up with like Brexit, where there was an entire discussion of whether or not, once the United Kingdom had left the EU, whether or not you would have to have a border on the northern part of Ireland. And like, it's impossible to implement because it's just country roads.
It's not really the Catholic versus Protestant thing. Like, Pierce and myself, the drummer, and me grew up right on the border. So like, a lot of the time we'd be like, where we were from, less than 5 minutes away, were, inverted commas, in a different country, you know. Now, the alcohol is cheaper, so I'll give them that. But
there you go.
I was getting to something more important there. Yes, so it's not really Catholic versus Protestant. It's more like a class divide of rich versus poor, especially in Belfast. Like, people who are Catholic and Protestant, especially our age, they don't care what you believe or what church you go to, if you go to church. It's more of a rich versus poor thing.
Fitting into genres, trends, all of that. Do you care at all?
No.
Don't
give a fuck.
Yeah. Wait, no, this is interesting. No. Well,
I think like, they're useful to think about. I'd never write with like an idea for what genre we're in, but like, it's useful to think about what you're trying to channel. Do you know what I mean? If you're writing something and you're trying to figure out what it is that
you're
doing.
But you're not sitting there going, well, you know, BBC Six is looking for this.
No.
So we'll
No. We're always kind of writing stuff from a, you know, it's never obviously we're not going to write a country album or something.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Well, if Wichita you guys are into doing a country album, I'm all in. That's all I listen to at the moment.
Guerrier's Y'all.
Yeah, Guerrier's Y'all. Guerrier's Drawl. We kind of just write and whatever sounds like. Ben has like loads of different like demos and stuff, and some things definitely derive from like hip hop and electronic techno kind of stuff. And, you know, we're always like, this doesn't sound like us at all. Let's do it.
What is the filter for a Guerrier song? How do you know?
That's a really good question.
How do you know that a song is right for you?
You can feel it in the room. Yeah, like the moment you play it, and like we're not all vibing with it. Like we'll play something sometimes and we could around with it for like an hour or two, and you'll know by the end of the hour or 3 months. Yeah. That's good though as well. The 3 months, sometimes you need to take like a long time to write a song to be like, cool, we've learned loads from this. This song is not going to be the song, but it'll inform other songs as well. Like, but I think for us, it's like, if we're not vibing with it, why the anyone else vibe with it? Yeah. No one else. Like, if we're not going to be moving to it, like the crowd's not going to be like, oh, this is deadly, man. Like, so it's just, that's like the barometer for us. If like you can feel it in the room, like,
yeah, we're the litmus test.
Yeah.
We wrote a song recently, I won't say the title, but I think we all know the one where we had the dispute over the name.
Yes.
But that was an example of the second we jammed it in the room, it was like, that's fucking sick.
I think dispute over the name is a great name for a song.
Oh, don't worry. We're hammering.
Maybe you should just call the song Dispute.
You're going to hate me for this, but I was actually thinking about that in the shower this morning, and I think we should change it again.
No, you're not. No, I got my way, so we're keeping it that way.
I couldn't care about the name. it's such a small difference.
Every gig has to be like you're playing in front of 20 people or 20,000. It's like, we played shows where we were in a tiny little pub in Bristol, and I had to stand on the ground. You couldn't fit me on the stage, but we still played it. Probably wasn't the best gig of our lives or whatever, but like we played it and people were jumping up and down and we were going into the crowd. An old man punched me in the face. You know, that's...
Yeah, I think I'd have anxiety and fear.
No, this is great.
You know what I mean?
This is a great close. We're going to do the last thing, but the old man punched you in the face.
Yeah, you know...
Because he didn't like that you were in his face?
No, he fell. He fell on the ground and he slipped on someone's beer. So I was singing Approachable at the time and I tried to help him get back up. And I turned the microphone away from myself, from my mouth. And I was like, are you okay? And he got up and he just swung and hit me in the face. And I had to sing. I couldn't do anything but just go, oh, I have to sing again. That's hard work.
Did you?
I guess you weren't very approachable.
Best story I've heard in a long time. Did you ask him why he punched?
I talked to him afterwards. I was like, did you enjoy the gig? And he was like, yeah, it was great. I was like, do you remember hitting me in the face? He was like, what?
So it was just a...
I think it was shock. He fell on the ground and he hurt himself, I think. And the first thing he did when he got up was just hit the nearest person that he could see. And it had to be me.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside and then songs by others in between.